Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the Livestock Show. A small bit of snow has brought a wintry feel to mid-March, but hopefully nothing too damaging or restrictive to busy farms all around the country. Once again, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan to talk all things farming. Later in the show, Aidan had a chat with David Corbett from Grassland Agro, so we will have a listen to that. As normal, to start, a quick fire questions for Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, two quick fires in for you. Quick fire one, I bought a few dairy calves and I have them in a fairly open suckler calving pen. They are standing around with humps on them a bit during the day, but still sucking fine. Should I be worried about them? A concerned suckler farmer, Adam.
Yeah, I suppose, Jack, those calves, whereas maybe a suckler calf will get away in those calving pens, but possibly being on the tri farms and looking at the setups that they have, they tend to have those calves in a maybe an enclosed shed. Now, maybe Aidan will come in on this, but maybe a closed in sort of a shed, maybe with no drafts. You know, like open calving pens can be quite open and drafts running through it, we'll say, on gates. And sometimes you see people on some of the tri farms that have done it as well, maybe two bales of straw in the shed and maybe a gate or something atop of those two bales and maybe straw on top of the gate, that it's a sort of a wee sort of a sheltered area or a warmer area for calves. Heat, I think, is important for them young calves, and they can get cold during the day. I suppose jackets is another one, but that's a big loss.
Yeah, spent a lot of time lying down, Aidan. Like, I mean, you get dairy calves on all your farms. Drafts are important, like as Adam said. Like,
they are, Jackie. Yeah, and I suppose the dairy cow doesn't have the dairy calf doesn't have the suckler cow keeping it warm. You know, like you wouldn't. In Adam's sheds, we'll say that the cow will shelter the calf, whatever else, and there's heat coming off the cow. You don't have that in the dairy calf scene. So definitely you don't need any drafts at low level, and you need plenty of straw in the bed so that the calf is retaining as much heat as possible. But, you know, it's been cold the last number of days, and some farmers are putting those heat lamps in sheds as well, you know, rather than maybe the straw little enclosure that Adam was talking about, a heat lamp in a corner of the shed and let them go underneath that. If for the very young ones, you know, the older calves will be fine.
Yeah. Cluster up under that finest. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Back to you in a minute, Aidan. Adam, ask Adam, second quick fire. I'm a spring calving suckler man at the moment, but I also have 100 yaws lambing in February. I was thinking of moving to autumn calving suckling. How should I go about the transition? That's not a quick fire now, Adam. Like, but give me a quick line on it in terms of moving from spring to autumn calving.
I kick the yaws out to April and I keep me cows for the war. But anyway, I suppose there's horses for courses. Geez, that's a big decision, Jack. Any autumn calving situation I have seen on farm, it's a high cost system. And unless you've really top quality silage that you're eliminating the need for concentrates going into the cow. Because I see maybe 2 or 3 kilos of concentrates going into the cow, and then there's another maybe kilo or 2 kilos going into the calf at the back of the creep as well. And it ends up being very, very, and unless you're unless you're at the real top of the game then in terms of maybe Belgian blue weanlings that you're getting out maybe sort of July, August time, I'd think hard about that before I go at that, and I'd tweak the system a little bit more maybe before I go cold turkey and go to autumn.
Good man. We might come back to it at some stage. Thanks for that. Maybe the April job for the sheep is the answer, Darren. Darren, one quick fire for you. I have a question for Darren here. I'm just renewing a 5-year land lease, and the lady in question who owns the land wants €50 per acre more, and also wants the single farm payment check. This is what she calls it, or he calls it, single farm payment check she has been getting for the last 5 years. I've tried explaining to her that it has gone down in value, but she doesn't understand or doesn't want to understand this emailer. Says, where do I go from here? Pay up, which would effectively mean I'd have to subsidize the check, and in practice, I'd be paying €100 more per acre. Darren, it's a long question, and it's not a short question, not a short answer to it either, you know, but it's a big one, and it's topical at the moment.
Oh, very topical, and I'm actually getting a lot of these, Jack. I'm taking it in this situation that it's probably a direct deal, because the auctioneers, to be fair, I talked a lot on this week, that are handling entitlements, they're well tuned in, and they would have maybe explained to that lady what's happening in the deco scheme, and Chris, don't change hands. Now, there has been a couple of situations where, say, if land is going with entitlements, there has been a deal done possibly on the eco scheme for this year or next year when there's no cost going with it. But that's few and far between. And if it was just leasing of entitlements straight off, it's definitely down to the best value. But if we just take, for example, and I'll do it very quick, €300, say, of an entitlement value in the past, that's now gone to 176 if you take out the eco scheme, take out the front load and the young farmers. Like, there's €130 there that farmer has to subsidize. And that's not, it's not a runner. Like, what I'd be sort of saying is to advise her to go and seek advice from Chagas, from a consultant, from an auctioneer. Now, the I suppose the pitfall of that is maybe the €50 that's going up on the land rent may not be
all that
heavy. So
So
maybe before you get advice on that, you just have to sort of weigh up the situation and see. But like definitely it's a tricky one, but like there's no reason to be handing back over Chris and Eco scheme. We've tried to get away from that a bit and trying to reduce the number of armchair farmers getting those payments. I think we'd be very slow to fall back into that trap again.
Okay, excellent. We'll touch off it again, no doubt, Darren, in the main show later. Aidan, question for you. Love the pod. I'm confused on the nitrates banding with all the changes. What year or years can I use to get my milk yield? I think I can use this current year, 2023 in brackets, but does that mean I should stop buying milk replacer and feed milk to the cows to reduce sales if I am near the top threshold? And if I do that for this year, does that mean my milk yield will stay at that for the next 3 years? Many thanks, Pat. Aidan, nitrates and banding and calculating the milk yield, talk to me.
Yeah, so Pat is right. He can use 2023 as his year, but it's only, you know, and like the issue is, you know, if you're at the top, if you're at the bottom end of the top band, so you're just over 6,500 liters or kilos, you can if you reduce your milk yield in 2023 to get under 6,500 kilos, you'll then be in that band, the second band, for 2024 as well as 2023. But you have to prove to be on, you know, you then go back then to either your 3-year rolling average or your previous year, which would be fine for 2024 because you'd be below it in 2023. So, but that doesn't carry on, I suppose, is the point. And the department are only saying you can nominate the year such as 2023, but nominate what you're going to be in 1 year only, which is for this year. So that option is gone from now on. You only have, you either have to do the 3-year rolling average or the preceding year in order to get, to get away with it in that sense.
Okay, excellent. That's good. Thanks for that. So he'll have to keep at that one, and we might talk a little bit about that again later on in the show. Thanks, Aidan. Adam, coming back to you, the SCEP scheme seems to be taking all the headlines this week. I mean, just take a step back from me, Adam, please, in terms of the SCEP scheme, in terms of what it is, like I BDGP, this is the new one, SCEP, this is in the new cap job.
Yeah, so this is basically the replacement, Jack, for BDGP. Look, it's a new name. It's a Suckler Carbon Efficiency Program. And with it comes new targets. I suppose BDGP had its targets there of 50% 4 and 5 star. We're starting off at 50% in SCEP. And then we go to 65 for 2 and 3. And then by year 5, we have to go to 75% 4 or 5 star on the replacement index. So that's causing some concern out there for farmers that might have been on just on the borderline for the 50%. They see now another 25% of those cows has to come into the herd between now and year 5 of the next program. The big two contentious issues with this one is the quality assurance, the Board B quality assurance. That's a requirement now for farmers who want to participate in SCEP. It's 150 a cow for the first 10, 120 a cow after that. If you want to join that scheme, you have to be a Board B quality assured member. So there's a little bit of leeway there in that it, in the initial phases or the initial terms and conditions, it was that you had to be a quality assurance member before you applied for SCEP. Applications are going to open in the next few days. That's not going to happen. So the department, I think, are going to come with some leeway on that, that if you're a Board B quality assured member by the end of October, before payment issues start in 2023, that will be okay. The other one is, as part of this scheme in year one, 80% of the calves born on your farm in 2023 need to be by a 4 or 5 star genotype sire or AI sire or whatever. It is a good thing, but Jack, think back, like 2023, those cows are born. So these cows went in calf in 2022 when we didn't know anything at all about this new scheme. Okay. So you could really be snookered in a corner in terms of not having enough of those on the farm in 2023, because you didn't genuinely know in 2022 when you were putting the cows in calf what the conditions of this scheme was. So farm organizations have met, I think, ICBF and the Department of Agriculture this week. And they're looking for a bit of leeway there in terms of kicking that on to next year has been one of the requirements. So the cows that go in calf this year, farmers can list out the bulls that they use and make sure they're all 4 and 5 star. And then the cows that are born in 2023 will be okay. And there's no, as well, there's no excuses then, because you're fully new in 2023 when you were breeding your cows, what needs to happen in 2024. So they're the contentious issues. Look, there's a bit of worry there, Jack. Look, if we cast our minds back to 2015, which is a long time ago, I know, but there was meetings around the country, there was uproar about stars, there was uproar about the targets, and I can almost sort of start to listen a bit of that now again, starting to creep in. And I've just said in the Suckler Focus this week, look, don't listen to anybody in this one. Go to there's going to 10 information meetings going to happen around the country. The first one is Mullingar on the 21st of March, Tuesday night, and go to those meetings or talk to people that know the terms and conditions, and that's the only opinion you need. And then just factor it into your own farm, because in 2015 there was people went along and listened to vocal people saying don't join this scheme, in the heel of the hunt, those people that were shouting actually joined it, and other people stayed out of it and they regretted it after they didn't go into it. So really, look, it's a time for level heads. Department are worried that they won't get enough people into this. They're targeting 20,000. I'm not too sure will they get 20,000 into it, but it's important, I guess, from a Suckler support point of view, that we have good uptake of it, because you know, support in the future could be hard to get if we didn't get good uptake of this one.
I expect changes at this stage. Like, I mean, if you're telling me that's going to be launched in the next couple of days, it seems late for changes.
No, I don't think that the only two changes I see will happen, it's been well flagged already with the quality assurance, you don't have to get in until October, and the other one is that one on the sires of the calves for 2023. I think that will kick on to 2024, but other than that, there'll be no changes there. It's going to be, and people are sort of still giving out about quality assurance. Look, it's in the terms and conditions. I know Suckler the Wheatland farmers, and they're rightly frustrated that there isn't a lot of merit to them going into that scheme, but look, if it's a requirement of the scheme and you get 150 a cow, we're just going to have to suck it up.
Talk to me on the trade, Adam, this week. Like, I think I saw somewhere there, farmers win the battle. But if I was to read Matt Carty then on a news page, the factories are winning the war. In terms of, I suppose, the price, and there was a push there to try and bring it down, Adam, it's fair to say, in the last kind of 2 weeks, was there?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I suppose winning the battle, but the war has been lost. Look at the try to get it back to 5.15, tried hard and tried hard even putting out stuff that it was going to drop further. But farmers didn't buy that and they didn't take it in, and they held back and they dug in and held back cattle last week. So they couldn't buy cattle at 5.15, have to get it back. They brought it back up to 5.20 and 25. Donegal increased their quotes by 10 cents to get cattle up to the northwest this week. But yeah, in terms of the war, I suppose we needed to be at €6 and we're down, we're somewhere around, you know, 5.50, 5.60. 60 probably for an R plus animal there today. But in terms of further outlook, I'd say they tried their hand at that now. You know, the numbers dropping again, 1400 the week before last, 600 dropped last week. So they're going down numbers. That puts the ball back in the farmers, at the farmer's foot. So I think you'll see it pretty stable now. I don't know what that wobble was about, but they're just trying to get prices down, and hopefully it'll stay up there for the next couple of weeks.
You haven't put the hand in the pocket yet to buy a bit of fertilizer, Adam, I see. And I see, looking at a survey there on one of the pages, you're up there at the border, like the Northern Ireland is the place to go for a ton of fertilizer. Can you ring up someone there and get a couple of tons landed down? What way does that work?
A lovely part of the country up here, Jack. We're known for innovation up here as well. That's where it is in the north. The latest price I got a price last night, 6.25 for sulfocan delivered into a yard, 6.70 for 18.612, and 7.65 for urea. That's coming from the north down south, and that's dropping. That's the 3rd of March actually, prices on that sheet. And I've seen a lot of fertilizer move. I'm only 4 miles from the border up here. A lot of fertilizer moving going south in the last week or so. So that seems to be where the value is at the moment. And look, at our survey would suggest that beef farmers have stayed out of the market. 70% haven't bought fertilizer yet. I suppose it's getting into crunch time now, because silage fertilizer will have to go out in the next sort of 3 weeks. So I'd say you'll see a lot of beef farmers moving now in the next week or two. And look, at hopefully it'll drop more.
How will that work with the register when it comes in, Adam? Like, in terms of how are they going to shut down that road from the north? Like, we'll say with the fertilizer register that's the bus to be starting soon enough.
That would be an ecumenical matter, Jack.
Okay, we'll come back to that on a later pod. Adam, come back to me in terms of the quickfire calves and a lot of suckler guys getting calves, and calf exports in general. Like, calf exports are going well. Some of your guys are keeping an eye on that, a close eye on that, in terms of the marts and what things are happening. And there's a few new customers in the market even for calves, is there?
Going brilliant, Jack. We've had the Netherlands is way up in terms of almost double the amount of calves that's gone out there in the first couple of weeks. In terms of, you have other countries like Spain, Italy, and you have a couple of countries in Eastern Europe as well, Poland, Lithuania, and those, a couple of those customers are actually in Castle Island this week with Nilas McAuliffe buying calves. Ships, look, it's been textbook weather, I suppose, in terms of ships going out there. A little bit of a lull in the last couple of days, maybe with the forecast and maybe the rough weather that was maybe coming, and maybe we've seen a little bit of exporters maybe standing out a wee bit in the last couple of days because of that. But other than that, it's been really, really solid. I'm hearing actually in the last couple of days about some issues with trucks, that there's a lot of weanlings going out to Eastern Europe, sort of in the back door into Turkey, and those lorries are, it's taken a long time to get those lorries back. And actually that's a limiting capacity at the moment in terms of livestock trucks, in terms of roll on and roll off going out there. So a bit of a backlog there, but other than that, it's been really, and look at that, that's going to bode really well for next year and the year after as regards beef price, because any year in the past where we have seen high exports, we've always seen a solid beef trade, we'll say, later down the road, just due to supply and demand.
Okay, last one, Adam. Tullamore Bulls. You have a nice suckler focus piece this week, and one of the key articles in it is around, I suppose, looking at the numbers on the bulls, whether you have them down there now, probably coming up to 12 months of age. Am I right there? And you've crunched the numbers on whether to sell them to this market now, this improving market into the market, or feed them on and finish them off.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of questions on this one around, I suppose, what are we doing, and are we going to, given the trade, and a lot of maybe other farmers are looking at the trade and saying, I'm going to offload here, I'm not going to put a ton of meal into these bulls, and we have the budget done. Look, it's tight and tight margins, but I think we're going to feed on Tullamore. We weighed them on the 2nd of February, they were 459 kilos, so putting them in at 310, Jack, they're probably weanlings making more than that, but we're on a sort of an R-grade weanling there, we're an R-grade weanling, we're feeding into a U-grade bull. So we're not at the top of the pops as regards weanling market, 310. Transport commission, €40, we're back to 1382. Put a ton of meal into them at 420. Another bits of cost there, 20 for silage, 20 for dose and testing, 50 for fixed costs in the shed, 100 for labour, and then killing costs of 40. In the heel of the hunt, basically, at the moment, if we have to put a ton of meal into them and the current value at 1422, there's €58 ahead in them to finish them. Now, it's not by any means a good margin, but I suppose the little caveat to that is we're really trying to push on carcass weight down there, and we feel maybe this year could be the year that we can do that, because our weights are very good on the 2nd of February at 459. We're 20 or 30 kilos ahead of where we were last year. And if we could put 20 more kilos onto them as an average carcass weight, we'd add that margin on at 110, so we'd be up at 168 euros ahead. And I suppose the whole project down there, maybe in terms of following through every year, it's nice to be able to go back across maybe 5 years and see the bull price every year. Whereas if we sell them in the market, then you'd always be wondering, well, what would they have made? And it's different analysis or whatever. So yeah, we're gonna feed on and feed through, and hopefully the first bull. Look, the heaviest bull down there is 580 kilos. So he's gonna come in May or whatever. So hopefully beef price will be up there, still up at 550 come that.
A big piece of mental, I suppose. Tell me, Adam, in terms of so 310, you're saying that you're doing your sums on 310. I'm just thinking of other farmers out there want to do this exercise for themselves.
Yeah,
to put the price down.
Yeah,
310 you're doing for your R grade. What price are you putting on the June carcass price?
550. So 380 carcass at 550. Our bulls are coming into 2090 and take off 2032 in cost. That's including the weanland cost coming in there. So it's 58 euros ahead. So the two figures are 310 for the weanland and 550 for the. And look at Jack, that's a crystal ball job for 550. Yeah. But I would hope that given where we're going, we'll be there at least by May time. Yeah.
Okay, 100%, Adam. I'll leave it at that. There's another nice article there on night feeding to push calving into the daytime. So I'll let you stay in the bed, Adam, and under the covers. Good luck. Chat to you next week. Darren, UK sheep markets are big on your agenda this week. And I suppose this builds into the whole piece around the kind of sheep price crisis that's there in the industry, because we're dependent on the UK market to a large extent. That's why the focus, like you've got a double page spread there showing the moves that are happening in the UK sheep markets over the last number of years. There's been some significant changes.
Yeah, Jack, and as you rightly said, we're dependent on the UK market for two things. One is this, say on a competition side of things, this we track the UK price closely because the UK are significant exporters into the EU markets, the same markets that we target. And when their price is weak, it undermines or I suppose it improves their competitiveness to Irish prices. And the other side of things is then that if they're buying, say, less sheep meat themselves, well, it's one less customer for Irish exports. But like very worrying trends across there. You're looking at production being forecast to be up 8-9% this year coming. That's coming on the back of drought conditions, higher feed costs. Lambs didn't do as well in roo crops. Well, I suppose, first of all, the forage didn't do as well. First of all, sheep didn't do as well in it. Utilization was poor. So a big carryover sheep into this year. But the big one, Jack, or the big worry is around consumption. The forecast is for a 9% drop off in consumption in 2023. That comes after significant drop off in consumption in the last 18 months. And if the 9% drop off in consumption is realized this year, since 2019, your consumption will have dropped by 21%, which like a 50-year consumption for a sizable market that the UK is with a large ethnic population, it's very worrying.
And I mean, as you say, just come back to me in terms of the relationship with the Irish market, because so consumption down, production up, so that in terms of the UK, that they're going the wrong direction. So how much, again, what proportion of the Irish market goes into the UK?
So it'd be a small portion, say, overall. Probably you'd be looking at the UK figures would say around 9,000 tons. The Irish figures will be slightly closer to 10,000 tons this year. Okay. Now, the still figures have to be finalised, if they're not fully finalised. We import probably similar coming back from the UK, but it goes out, say, it's maybe important in carcass form, goes out to some markets. I suppose the trade balance isn't hugely different there, but at certain times of the year, it's an important market for Ireland. But okay, the big one is how we compete, and also is that puts extra sheep meat onto the EU market. And longer term, what I'd have a big worry on is that there's a real sort of policy in the UK sort of coming back again about, say, cheap food policy. Look, there's a lot of, I suppose, maybe social unease is probably the best way of putting it in the UK. And I think that politically, We even seen like a lot of talk there around when there was scarcity tomatoes and whether it was Brexit that caused that or what caused it. Like whatever has caused it at the moment, whether you say Brexit or COVID or the war in Ukraine, the reality is the consumers are feeling the pinch in the UK and they have less disposable income. And the first thing that's hit, unfortunately, is sheep. And so you're downgrading in your proteins. But the other thing that it also does is it makes you in New Zealand lamb more attractive. So in the past, the UK was historically had very strong links to New Zealand, took in huge volumes of New Zealand lamb, and then sold its higher, say, value sheep meat to the EU. And you're seeing, I suppose, maybe a small bit of recovery in that. And then the other thing that I'd be really worried about is the tariff-free deal that's done with Australia, that over the next 10 years, Australia can export 75,000 tons of sheep meat into the UK. So as well as all the turmoil around, say, consumption, around production being up, in the back of everyone's mind, you have more New Zealand sheep meat coming into the market, the potential for more Australian sheep meat, and what impact that has then in the future years of New Zealand taking that in and pushing more higher and higher quantities of UK lamb onto the EU market.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Now hear you loud and clear. So, I mean, Darren, there are some hopes that the sector is going to get a little support on this one. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So, Charlie McConnell, excuse me, has said in there this week that he has instructed the department to look at, say, what could be done. Is there some funding there available? Now, he's been very cautious or very coy in what he's saying, because he's also saying that any funding that is there, say, for 2023 is already allocated. So funding to be made available for the sheep sector would mean cuts elsewhere. Look, the reality is, Jack, we know that there is funding there on an annual basis. Like the Department of Agriculture is one of the highest departments to return the funding allocated. I think it was somewhere like 40 million last year. We had a figure like that. So it's not as if there shouldn't be funding there. Sheep farmers feel aggrieved that in the last cap, there was 25 million allocated per annum. This time there's 20 million allocated per annum. They feel that that has been a significant reduction on the department's watch. So I think there is an appetite there. I think in the department to do something. What will be done, I'm not sure, but I do think that we'll see something coming.
Okay, excellent. Darren, the other big one this week, of course, is entitlements. And there's a front page story there in terms of the value of entitlements going down and more, I suppose, considering sale of entitlements. And this, Darren, I presume, relates to the kind of the amnesty that's there for 2 years on this 20% clawback. If they sold, there was a 20% clawback on sale. That's gone for 2 years.
That is. Now, we should also point out, Jack, that was there in recent years and it wasn't taken up. So, it's not the amnesty, I suppose, is an allowance that's there at the moment. But the department tried with an amnesty and even reducing the clawback in recent years, and it didn't get traction. The main reason why it's getting traction now at the moment is we've seen a significant erosion in the value of entitlements. So if we go back to our quick fire, we said about, say, our entitlement worth 300 euros. Yeah. That entitlement now has been subject to 25% being removed to fund the eco schemes, 10% to fund Chris or fund Loden, 3% to fund the young farmer schemes. 38% of that value has been taken. Now, some people might say, the last time there was 44% put into greening, but that's dead with the entitlement. The 38% now that has been deducted is gone. And by what I mean is gone is it is absolutely no link to entitlement. If you started farming in the morning, Jack, and you have no entitlements, you can get your eco scheme payment. You need one entitlement to activate your CRSP payment, but that's all. And if you're a young farmer, you don't need entitlements for that. So it has reduced, say, the demand to push. Then the other element is this, is say the convergence is reducing the value of high value entitlements. So in essence, most entitlements are going to be reduced by 40 to 45% this year in value. Mm-hmm. So it's leaving 60% to share out. So if I was, say, leasing those entitlements off you last year worth 300 euros, the general sort of deal was you kept 60%, 180 euros, I got 120. Take off all our cuts and bring it back to 170. If you were to keep that 60% now, you'd be definitely creaming it. And I would be very reluctant to give or to tie up money because you're paying up front if you're going to an agent. So I'd be very sort of reluctant to tie up that money. And that's what's happened now at the moment. And we're seeing a rebalancing of the market in this. Farmers leasing in the entitlements have said, hang on, I'm not giving you 60% of that. And depending on the value of the entitlement, there's been a significant readjustment in market values for leasing, first of all.
Right, yeah. Right, and of course, Darren, it's fair to say that this is all just kind of, I call it warming up now. Here we are kind of early March, mid-March. I mean, this over the next 2 months will be hot on the agenda. There's with auctioneers and agents around the country. Like this is really kicking off now, you know, only kicking off at this time of the year.
Yeah, so it's really up and running, and like it hasn't even got up and running to a full extent because farmers are still waiting for their entitlements position. So the business that auctioneers are doing at the moment is just the entitlements that they've had on hand for maybe the last 18 years or even 5 years that they know is there. They're not, say, processing them fully through, but what they're doing is getting some of the work out of the way, doing the deal, so between me and you brokering that deal as of what it's going to be. And what they're seeing more and more is that there's a greater appetite now from farmers who have seen an erosion in the value of entitlements to sell, and there's also a greater appetite from farmers that are coming looking for entitlements to buy because I suppose it's more attractive if I was buying because it's a less of a ball of money to pay out. There hasn't been a difference in regards to value. So 2.2 to 2.5 times, but it's 2 to 2.5 times off a smaller initial investment. Yeah. So that's what's driving it at the moment.
Yeah. Darren, I'll leave you on this. Just the snow, I suppose, and the weather. I mean, I know it's not nationwide, but I mean, over the back end of the week, there was a touch of snow kind of in most places. For lambs that kind of, you know, spring barn lambs that were, you know, 5-10 days old, like is that little bit of a bout of cold weather, is it any harm to them, or should guys be looking to kind of house them temporarily for a couple of days, or kind of what's typically happening out there?
So it depends, Jack, on shelter and nutrition, and shelter is the big one. If lambs are well fed, yours plenty of milk and good shelter, there hasn't really been too much problems. It wasn't really the snow per se that caught them. There was more the wind chill and in the rain and the reduction in temperatures that sort of, and like there was a good few cases of hyperthermia reported in lambs, but I think there was a good bit of warning to it that most fellas say got away. Now, if this lasts longer, your sort of mid-season lambing flocks that are ramping up lambing at the moment, it'll put pressure on housing. But I think this if it hit next week, it'll be probably worse because you'd have a significant higher number of lambs outdoors, and you'd also space be at a premium in sheds.
Okay, I hear you. So maybe the timing isn't bad, and in fairness, those February lambs have had a good gallop outside, so some of them are not too bad and they're moving along. Darren, 100% thanks for that. We'll chat to you next week. Aidan, staying with the weather, and I know maybe it's maybe there's snow in parts of the country where a lot of the cows are out, you know, but grass growth in general, like we'll say, is it kind of clicking around kind of normal levels, or are we a bit behind?
A little bit behind, Jack, but not by much. You know, it's more or less where you'd expect for early March. Like you're talking mid-teens to, you know, 10 to 20 kilos, I suppose, is kind of the average that I'm seeing around the country. But really, I suppose it's the next couple of weeks are the really critical ones for grass growth. So ordinarily, you'd see growth rates pushed up to 20, 30, and maybe pushing 40 kilos by the end of March. And that's really essential in order to have enough grass back there in those first graze paddocks to have a second rotation that, you know, going into covers of 1,100 kilos in early April. If we don't get that, if that doesn't happen because the weather stays colder, I know there's milder weather coming next week, but if the changes again, let's say, you're really then, that's an indicator that you've put on the brakes, slow down the grazing rotation, put in silage, put in extra feed until such time as growth rates take off and you've certainty that you've enough grass there in the second rotation. What you don't want to do is end up grazing away like hell until the end of March and then realize, listen, there's only, you know, 600 or 700 kilos in my first graze paddock. And then you need to put in a heap of silage. and then graze low, really low covers, and cows race through them, and the diet is all messed up at that point, and you're putting in, you know, 5-6 kilos a meal. It's a recipe for stomach upsets, for very loose dungs, if you're putting in a lot of silage, then Jack, it's poor for the diet. Like, you know, silage is low in energy, it's very low in protein, and it's not, you know, typical grass silage at this stage. It's, you know, mid-60s in terms of D&D. All the nice good bales are probably used up at this stage. So it's something I'd be inclined to put in feed now and be cautious now, you know, based on the information you have available, the cover per hectare, the growth rates, and what percentage of the farm you've grazed.
Okay. I mean, the other big part of that, of course, Aidan, is nitrogen and kind of fertilizer and putting the foot in the pedal to try and drive growth. I mean, for the traditional type of guy, Aidan, that has, you know, stocked fairly right, stocked 2.5 cows per hectare or whatever and higher. I mean, in terms of second round, is that gone out yet, we call it? Here we are now talking kind of 10th, 11th, 12th of March. Like, is that gone out, or is he still dependent on that first round of nitrogen that's gone out earlier on?
Sure, a bit of both, Jack. They were probably put off spreading it because of the cold weather that was forecast for this week, you know, just gone. And that put people off. But then it was so good earlier in the week, then some people went with it, you know. And that for me, that'd be fine. I know there was snow sitting in the ground, but the total rainfall was low enough. And if it's a urea-based product, it's stable in the soil, so I wouldn't be concerned about it. It's a mix of them, Jack, you know. So if you went with a half bag in early February or late January with, you know, and spread slurry on the other ground, at this stage, I'd be saying go back in with 28 or 30 units of nitrogen, preferably in the form of urea or predicted urea, and that'll drive on grass growth then into, you know, for the rest of March and into April. And particularly now if there's milder weather coming, like, there'll be a good uptake of that nitrogen, there'll be great growth rate, and you'll really ensure that you have enough grass in the farm for the second rotation if you do that. You know, paddocks, those recently grazed paddocks, they are growing, you know, it takes a while for them to turn around, but when they turn around and you get that little bit of a more leaf area, and that captures the sun then, and, you know, that really drives on growth. So sunshine is a big driver of growth as well, not just nitrogen at this time of year, obviously, and soil temperature, but it's you need all three together really to get good growth rate.
We talked about it in the quickfire, the whole nitrate job, Aidan, and you've a decent article there this week in terms of looking at kind of the conundrum of the policy piece and the nitrates and getting more land into dairy systems, etc., that kind of thing. And I suppose, and I see also there's a piece there in the news pages there about the profit reduction that the nitrates piece is going to cause. Like, I mean, you're bringing it all together, Aidan, and kind of, I suppose, standing back from it in terms of where we are now. You know, I mean, are there guys making real significant changes to their systems because of the banding piece, or that they see the 220 coming and they want to kind of get ahead of it? Are they making bad decisions at the moment for high-priced land, we'll say, that's maybe not adjoining the milking platform? Like, let's take it that a lot of this land they're getting is away from the milking platform. Can they make bad decisions, or is the financial capacity in the business to be able to carry that kind of extra land at that higher cost?
It's a difficult one to answer, Jack, because it depends on the, you know, how well the farm is being run at the moment and how sustainable it is from a financial, environmental, and all other aspect of it. But presuming that it is sustainable, and I say sustainable is go back to what you said, you know, 2.5 to 3 cows a hectare on a milking platform stocking rate. And you're growing, you know, 14, 15 tons of grass on that type of system. So very closely aligned to what you call the more part type of a blueprint. You know, what we would consider in all the programs we've been involved in a sustainable system. If you need to get additional land to sustain that, it's probably not a bad idea to go do that. You know, and those farmers are, some of them are paying big money for land, but they're doing that because it makes sure that they retain what they have. They can hold what they have if they achieve that. But if your system is out of kilter at the moment, you're already, you know, maybe overstocked relative amount of grass that you can grow. You're bringing in a lot of imported feed. Maybe you're buying silage in the open market every year to sustain, you know, to get enough winter feed in, and you're feeding an awful lot of meal in order to you know, to keep cows fed because you just haven't enough grass for them. For me, there's probably things you can do on that farm to become more sustainable environmentally, you know, financially and everything else with it. So maybe by reducing stocking rate in that situation, going in, maybe you might fall into a lower band, but you'd be relying less on imported feed, you'd be a more sustainable system. That might be a better option in that case than going away spending €400 or €500 an acre on lease land just to keep what cows you have and basically to run faster just to stay still. So it's a bad, it's difficult to explain it. That's kind of my view on it. And like I, you know, it's a bit of a disaster for those, that first cohort of farmers I spoke to have to buy land or buy or lease land in order to retain what cows they have, because they believe they're already sustainable. They've been told for years they're sustainable. I believe they're sustainable, but because for whatever reason they're maybe in the top band, or they're stocking, they're growing so much grass because they've got clover or really good soils, they're able to support a higher stocking rate. They're now being forced by this government decision to cut back in cow numbers, or else take on extra land just to dilute their nitrates. For me, that doesn't really make any sense. And that's kind of what I was trying to say in the article. Mm. Like, so, you know, these good farmers that are doing everything right, have, for them to take on extra land, that's doing someone else out of a business, whether that's a tillage farmer or a beef farmer or another dairy farmer that needs land for whatever reason to expand or grow their business, or in their, you know, they need it worse, or they need it for agronomic purposes, not just for paper purposes, like these farmers are taking on that land for. It's a misnomer. It's bad for the whole industry. It reduces the competitiveness of Irish agriculture, and it's a policy decision, you know, which doesn't make sense.
Correct, exactly. Yeah, with no direct benefit to the environment piece in terms of reducing the derogation level and potentially changing the systems, you say. I mean, that other piece, you've been talking about it a couple of weeks now, was that Chagas report that came out, Aidan, in terms of, I suppose, looking at that whole space. Like, I mean, I see, like, it's backing up what you were saying. It's backing up, you know, all of that piece in terms of the potential shift into higher production systems as well. Yeah. That's all included in that piece, isn't it?
It's a very strong report, Jack. The language in it is very strong. You know, normally sometimes those reports can be wishy-washy, but this one isn't. It's far from it. It's very strong in that the risk to Irish agriculture and to water quality, that farmers that have to reduce their cow numbers will bring in extra feed in order to make up the difference with higher milk yield per cow, and the risk that brings to water quality. It also says that the cost-benefit analysis of reducing stocking rate to improve water quality is very weak, and that there's a 10 times benefit from reducing the amount of nitrogen that's being used on farm compared to the reduced stocking rate in order to reduce your nitrate leaching. So it's very clear that, you know, the other measures that are already introduced and are agreed, and most farmers are working their way through that, such as the fertilizer register, such as banding, such as reduced amount of chemical nitrogen. So it's 10% reduction this year. It's probably going to go up to 15% in 2024. That all those measures, buffer zones, fencing of water courses, they're all going to have a much greater impact on water quality than this stocking rate reduction. And it references all the studies that they have, in Irish and international studies, showing that stocking rate alone doesn't impact on water quality. In actual fact, increasing stocking rate, keeping everything else the same, will improve water quality because you're removing more nutrients in the form of milk solids from the farm. And that, you know, those nutrients being removed reduce the amount of available nitrogen for losses. So it's really, I mean, the government, vis-a-vis the Department of Housing and Local Government and the Department of Agriculture and the European Commission, need to sit down, read this report, and then change that stupid condition they have in, you know, in my view, that farmers need to reduce back to 220 kilos of organic in 2024. It just doesn't make scientific sense, and this report proves that.
Okay, excellent. The other piece that maybe we didn't see coming, I suppose, Aidan, is that whole piece around the young farmers and the TAMs, you know. So now this is specifically around the milking equipment piece. So if a young farmer is looking to get a TAMS grant on a milking equipment, a milking parlour, that effectively they're restricted in terms of what numbers they can grow. They can't grow. So if they, my understanding of it, Aidan, is that if they have 100 cows when they go for the TAMS grant, they have to stay at 100 cows if they take grant aid on milking equipment. Am I right in your understanding, or do you understand it the same way?
Well, the 100 cow one probably wouldn't be a great example to use because you can go to 120 cows.
Okay.
Is my view. So if this young farmer is at 130 cows, they can't go any more than 130 cows. But I think they can, if they're at 100 cows, I think they can go to 120. Okay. But I'm standing open to be corrected there. And I suppose the very fact that we don't know the rules, Jack, just highlights the issue that's at play. I mean, so these TAMs, you know, they've announced what's in the TAMs, but yet the terms and conditions are coming piecemeal through leaders' questions and ministerial questions and the Dáil. I mean, it doesn't, you know, there needs to be a better communication around what's going to happen here. In terms of, you know, what's actually contained, what we do know about it, I mean, it's, there's a lot of anger there among young farmers about this rule coming in. It really sets, I suppose, a limit on what cows that they can have. It's in order for them to claim down the grant aid on the milking equipment. Now, okay, you can argue they can ignore the milking equipment part of the TAMS and go away and you know, put up a shed or use that to put up roadways or
whatever,
you know, collars and cows or whatever else they want, and use their money that way, bulk tanks and so on and so forth, and use, build the milking parlour, whatever many units they want, out of their own funds, or go in and get a loan for that. But I mean, it's the principle really that you need to look at here. And for me, the principle is flawed in that if I'm a 40-year-old farmer who's been farming for 7 or 8 years, and I've 122 cows, I can't get a TAMS grant. Whereas if I'm a young farmer who's been farming for 4 years, you can get a TAMS grant even if I'm milking 159 cows. Like, you know, why, like, I'd love to know, I'd love to meet the person that's setting up these rules and understand their logic behind it. And if we understand, if we got their logic behind why this is, they feel that this is important, that you need to restrict someone who's 40, but someone who's younger can milk, you know, 1.5 times the number of cows they have. Like, I don't know.
Okay, doesn't stand up. Excellent. Aidan, earlier you had a chat with David Corbett from Grassland Agro on a lot of the on-farm stuff. I think let's have a listen.
David, look, the forecast has been very changeable. Look, we're going through a really cold period, I suppose, the last couple of days, snow in places, ice nearly everywhere. At the same time, the forecast is looking better for the coming week and milder temperatures coming. Would you spread fertilizer now, or where's your head at in relation to you know, fertilizer strategy over the next few weeks?
Yeah, it's a good one, Aidan, and it's definitely a debate around the country now. The weather has changed, as you said. So to be honest, I would sit on it. I would leave the fertilizer in the air until things change. Look, what I would say, if there was a bit of frost at night and it was thawing during the day, there would be no issue with that. But when you have, you know, a bit of snow sitting there and very cold temperatures, might be best to hold off on it, as you say, until things change. Look, soil temperatures before this were around 7 degrees, maybe a small bit wetted, but that has definitely stunted soil temperatures. Okay, that's going to have a question then around the efficiency then of nitrogen or fertilizer that is going to be put out.
Look, well, I'd say now, David, that temperatures, air temperatures next week are forecasted to be 10, 12 degrees. I know that's not soil temperatures, but like, you know, you'd expect the soil temperatures to be rising in that situation. Would you still not go spreading, like, you know, this weekend or early next week, considering the forecast that's there?
Oh yeah, look, if the forecast is good, yeah, I would, but I would wait until things have thawed and things have turned the corner, as you said. Air temperatures are rising, the soil will be a small bit in behind that. But as you said, the ball is rolling. You will get a bit of resilience with that. I suppose we're on Friday now. Hopefully we're only around the corner now and things will turn. But look, on the other side of that, Aidan, I'm not saying don't go over it. Just make sure that there is a good forecast ahead of you. Look, even going back to a bit of research done in Chagas, look, and there's a lot of research done on it. Early nitrogen is very, very important. Very important, because we need it there when the soil temperatures do change, when that soil kicks off. You need that nitrogen in the ground to support that growth.
Absolutely. And do you think, have many lads gone already with the first round, we'd say, end of January, early February? Or is there more doing it now or less compared to other years? I know nitrogen.
Yeah, definitely. I would say in that majority of farms I'd be on, majority of farmers I am talking to, there is either slurry or you know, nitrogen in the form of mostly urea, protected urea, has been spread on 100% of the platform. Look, and that is super. And if that hasn't been done or there hasn't been nitrogen put out, look, I would be advising to do that. The other thing, Aidan, is that there has been a lot of grazing done, and I would say that probably the drier farms are even hitting up and over 50% of the farm, heading for 60% grazed. which is super. That cold spell has stunted growth a small bit, but before that cold spell, we were probably looking at maybe an average around the country of maybe 15 kilos of grass growth a day, which is grand. Mm. It's probably in line with what historical grass measuring has shown. But the other thing is that heavy farms are probably going to be a small bit more stunted again than those drier farms. So, and I do think those heavier farms, which we would always say are always a small bit more behind, they do also have a lot of their land area grazed. So just having a bit of nitrogen there when that growth comes is very important.
And how much would you recommend for someone to spread now that hasn't any nitrogen spread so far? What are your guidelines for the moment?
Yeah, you'd want to be going around the 30, 35 units, to be honest, Aidan. Yeah, if there's nothing spread, ground will be hungry. And look, the other thing too, Aidan, is with the way the weather has come there in the last 3 or 4 years, and I won't get into the figures too much, but just in terms of grass growth, look, we talked about maybe 60% of those drier farms are grazed to date, maybe 50-60%. Look, that's super. There's been very little damage done on the ground, and I think that is going to set up the sward savage for the year ahead. You're starting from a clean slate, and that is super. But then the other thing, Aidan, is when we come into the end of April and early May, and I know a lot of farmers won't want to hear me saying this, but if there is an opportunity to maybe take out a few paddocks there early May, I would advise farmers to maybe think about it. And if you're not measuring grass, maybe try and get a bit of a handle on it, because with the way the summers are coming in there in the month of maybe July, those few bales that are taken out first week of May, second week of May, could be an absolute godsend there in that month of July, when we might come into a bit of a drought situation. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's the man above that's going to dictate that. But it is something maybe to think, just to keep in mind, and it's going to be very hard to have that surplus grass if there's not enough nitrogen there to support that grass growth.
Yeah, but I suppose, to be fair, it's kind of a trade-off too, though, isn't it? Like, you don't want to be spreading too much nitrogen and having too much surplus, you know, because there's potential for losses there then as well if you're putting too much out. So it is probably finely balanced.
I'm not saying to over-rig it, Aidan. I'm just saying, just have enough there. Look, it's a happy medium, and there's a lot of moving parts there. You're relying on the weather to play ball as well, which is the biggest dictating factor that nobody has any control over.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was looking at the Chagas guidelines for fertilizer use there recently as well. And they're saying from May onwards, it's time to cut back on the clover paddocks. Now, I know you have your clover, a special fertilizer for clover. When would you recommend guys to start going with that? And what's in it, maybe? Just explain to the listeners.
Yeah, Clover Boost is it's a range that we developed last year. So Clover Boost is a 7 nitrogen, 3 phosphorus, and 12 potash, with sulfur, magnesium, boron, and sodium. So, we're specifically formulated it to suit those clover paddocks, because they're very nutrient sensitive. There are issues with clover. There's every reason not to put it in, and we're hearing all the bad stories, and we're hearing stories about not getting it to persist. And that's what we're trying to do with this Clover Boost product is take that nutrient problem away from farm by using this sort of a technology or this sort of a product, so that you're specifically focusing those clover paddocks and you're feeding each grazing or each crop you're growing. So what I'd be saying is, look, early May. That is when you're kind of hitting things are absolutely humming on farm. There's grass growing and when the soil is working, the clover is working along with it.
And David, is that available without the phosphorus in it? Because you know there's a lot of farmers now won't have a phosphorus allowance this year, we'll say. Is it possible to get it without added phosphorus?
Yeah, so that's something that we have not launched yet, Aidan, but it will be available this year. So an NK product, a 7 and 14 potash, 7 nitrogen, 14 potash product that will be available this year coming. So, phosphorus, it's a big issue going forward around regulation and allowances. And we've seen through the reports the issues around pea and pea losses and the effect it's having on waterways. So look, we do need to be very, very cautious about how much pea is going out. Going from now into the year ahead, we do need to be looking at our soil test results. Sit down there for an evening and have a look through them. And pick out those few paddocks that are maybe low in phosphorus and target them maybe in the next 2 or 3 weeks with some bit of a nitrogen with a phosphorus, some bit of a phosphorus fertilizer. Because, look, the problem is even at low soil temperatures, availability of phosphorus is very poor. So to take 7 degrees, for example, which was the figure I quoted there a few minutes ago, and at 7 degrees, there's actually only 10% of your phosphorus available in the ground, which is not too bad at an index 3 or 4, because you have a concentration there where there's 10% of available that will support your low grass growth. But if you're in index 1 or 2 and you only have 10% of that available, there's not enough there to support that growing plant. And this is where we're talking about the nitrogen going in as well, Aidan. You're talking about efficiencies and losses and whatnot. Every kilo of nitrogen we put into our platform or into our silage fields has to be supported by a certain amount of phosphorus, potash, sulfur, and a range of micronutrients. So we need to get all that right. And they're the fine margins. They're the fine lines in getting the most out of our nitrogen and getting that nitrogen use efficiency up. And again, going back to time and time again, we're talking about it in lime. Lime is the big one. Get the lime right. Again, 50 or 60% of the farmers graze now. If there's any of those fields that are low in lime and need lime, go now. Perfect time. There's low covers there. Target them at the moment.
Yeah, ideal. Listen, there's some great advice there, David, for Patia. Before I leave you go, finally and quickly, who's up on the grass pod or sod pod this week? And
sod pod,
what are you talking about?
Oh, that's where it's all happening on the sod pod. Ed. So last week, look, we kept it with myself, James, John, Lauren and Claire. So look, that's our own technical team within Grass and Agro. So look, we were talking about all things grass, nitrogen, grazing, the ins and outs of it. So if anyone wants a small bit more detail or a bit more in-depth information on the grazing or fertilizer strategy going forward, do have a listen. And the previous fortnight before that, we were talking to James Ryan, the vice principal in Kildalton. So look, a few very, very nice nuggets from
it's available on the website, is it, David?
Yeah, it's on our website, and it's on all the platforms there as well. Spotify's in, one of the more used ones. So,
right, folks, thanks to David Corbett from Grassland Agro and Aidan for that chat. That's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren, and Aidan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcasts. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.